Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. Today's short story, which we'll play at the end of the episode, is from Twisted Reunion. We are going to be going with Workshop Aftermath. I think it's a little bit of a long one, but also fun. I forget what grade they're in. I think it might be 8th graders. But yeah, for those of you that enjoy Stephen King short stories, this one you'll probably enjoy. As far as what's going on, hopefully you enjoyed last week's episode where I interviewed Armand Rosamilla. That was really cool. One really good thing there are a couple of good things that came out of it. One was I learned quite a bit. It also really got me motivated to start doing more with the podcast, start doing more with marketing and all the things that I knew I should do. But talking with him definitely helped with that. The other really cool thing is that him and I are going to be doing a collaboration. He does a lot of collaborations. This one will be for Try Not to Die. He really liked the idea, and I believe we will be doing some zombies. I think his best-selling series is Dying Days, and so we'll probably jump into his world and do that. And the nice thing with that one is it will go really quick. I think the way we're going to work it is he'll develop the main story, and then I'll do all the death scenes. So, since I seem to like to kill characters quite a bit. So that'll be cool, and it'll be written really fast. We probably won't start it, though, until, I don't know, maybe another 5 or 6 months. We both have so many projects, but that is in the works. As for the contest, right now, it is a battle for first place between Eva Davis and Dusty Dirt. Dusty is winning with 33 points. Eva is right behind him with 2 less. There are, I think it's 4 more days of voting, so I think there's 8 more possible points that they can get. So that's up for grabs, but one of them will be taking first place. Unless they both stop voting right now, and actually, you know what? I think it is one of them. I think the other person is about, I think Sarah's 7 points behind or something like that. So I don't know. It's pretty close. But yeah. So get those votes in if you haven't done so. There's a daily winner of a print book, the Try Not to Die on Brightside. And everyone's entitled to get a Try Not to Die Kindle edition when it comes out. And there's a random drawing too. So there'll be one random drawing for the $50 Amazon gift card. And then places 1 through 10 will be getting at least a $50 gift card. So that is going well. I'm also, then that's at marktullius.com/competition, or just go to marktullius.com. And I'm also going to be running another contest probably next week for Untold Mayhem, where I will be, every day will be a 1 or 2 print copies of Untold Mayhem. And I'm not sure what the main prize will be, but it'll probably just be a random thing. I don't think you're going to have to answer questions or put in a lot of time or effort. One of the cool things that I did do with the contest is increase my Goodreads followers and BookBub followers. That was one of the ways you can earn points. You could also earn points by subscribing to this podcast, my newsletter, visit me on Instagram, that kind of stuff. But I'm realizing the importance of Goodreads followers and BookBub followers. So if you are on either of those sites and could add me or follow me or whatever else, that would be awesome. I was joking around about it the other day saying, I like to think of it as stalking. So I was like, so the more people that are following me or stalking me, the more anxious I get, and I thrive on that anxiety. So please stalk me. It makes me feel important too. Kind of like Jesus. How many followers can I get? If I get enough, maybe I could start my own little cult, which I've always wanted to do. I think it would be a pretty fun cult. And also with the contest, you guys are, I think the average is about, you're dying 60% of the time, which is pretty fair. Sometimes it's a 50% chance. Sometimes there's 3 questions, and so you only have a 33% chance of living. So right now, everyone's pretty much, It's all luck. But that's nice. And I saw yesterday's choice was I was able to steer most of you guys to your death, which is fun. I want people to die in the book. I want you to think, oh yeah, that's probably the right thing, and realize, oh shit. If nothing else, it helps us remember that it doesn't always matter whether or not we're making the right choice. Like, sometimes there is no right choice. Shit can always go wrong. Death is always just right around the corner. So yeah, I think that is enough on the contest. One of the things that we had to stop for the contest was every day I was putting up the new audio chapter. Donna Gonzalez, my co-author, was narrating it, but a bunch of stuff came up. She is going to be starting a new job, and right now her life is pretty crazy. So I told her, let's just stop the recording and I'll hire someone through ACX. So right now, I am listening to all the additions from all these different narrators that want the job. They all love the idea of a choose your own adventure. It's funny how many people just say though they just absolutely love those books. People my age, I think, grew up on them. I definitely did. And that's the main reason why I'm writing the series. But yeah, so that is up for auditions right now. I think I'll probably hire someone by Monday. And then it should be out pretty quickly. The other thing I decided to do was to put Untold Mayhem up there as well. That one, I already hired someone. Instead of doing this, originally I was going to have Jeff Campbell record it, but he's busy with Ain't No Messiah. He still has the Try Not to Die animated clip he's working on. And then we're also writing Try Not to Die at Satan's Island. So I realized he's just not going to have the time. I don't want to wait that long either. And so I told him I'm just going to go ahead and put it out myself. So I hired someone. I was listening to all these auditions, but then someone wrote to me about multicasting, which is where you have a different narrator for each story. Or because there's 24 stories, I'm going to do one. And then these other narrators will probably do two each, or some might be just single. But another cool thing that happened because of that was I decided that lots of the third-person stories could be read by females. So instead of it just being one male reading every single story, which can get kind of boring, we're going to have a multicast on that. So I'm excited about that. That is already in the works. All right, guys. My camera just went out because I didn't charge the battery or my backup battery. But I also realized you guys don't need to look at me. So no more camera for today. All right, now on to some depressing shit. Sort of depressing. I know it's not a big deal in the large scheme of things, but for me, it was definitely a little bit hard. Last week, my back went out really bad. My neck started hurting. It was the day after jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu practice was awesome. It had two good days in a row. And then my neck was really sore. Next thing I know, it feels like I'm being stabbed in my back, like right underneath my left shoulder blade. So I knew my ribs were out, and they were all out. I was super twisted, which is what happens when my Atlas goes out. And it took an entire week of chiropractic and acupuncture to deal with the pain and to get rid of it. So that sucked. But then I was finally able to train again. So I went on Monday to Gracie Baja. Had an awesome session. Felt so good. I was able to just do everything I wanted. I was smart about it. I didn't do the first two drills, which were stand-up drills where you had to do a throw, like a hip toss. So usually I would just be like, oh yeah, I'm not going to say I have to sit out. I didn't just never do that. I was like, okay, I'm going to be smart. So I sat out on those. But then when I was rolling, whether it was just rolling on my own, or there was one time where I kind of got caught in a little bit of a triangle and the guy was squeezing super hard, and it didn't tap, I just got out of it. That could have been what did it. But all I know is the next day, my neck was a mess, hurt all day long, it was hard to think, it was hard to sleep at night. And then I got checked at Vital Head and Spine, and yes, my Atlas was off again, or my C1. So I had a good talk with the doctor, Dr. Licata and Dr. Radwanski, about just, I have to give up jiu-jitsu. The elasticity in those ligaments is not, It's just too loose. They're not strong enough to prevent this from happening anymore. So as much as I enjoy jiu-jitsu, as much as I love it, especially now that my son is training and my wife's training all the time, I just need to stop. So there is one more thing I'm going to try. I have an appointment to see my wife's doctor and about prolotherapy. Supposedly that has pretty good results. But even with that, I'm expecting to take off at least, 6 months from now. So we'll see. Maybe I will revisit jiu-jitsu down the road. But for now, I'm realizing I need to focus on other things. Dr. Licata did a really good job of getting me motivated. He knows how much I enjoy jiu-jitsu, how much I don't want to give it up, and the reasons why. And so he was like, well, what if we, he's like, what if you just use that to focus on different areas? And at first I was just thinking in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I could do yoga or something else that's maybe competitive. And he said, not only just physical, he said, but what about being an author? What about, all these different areas of my life that I can put more focus on now that I won't be jiu-jitsu? And so that's what I did. This last couple days, just yesterday alone, I did 36 ads on Amazon for all my books, or six of my books. I did one ad for each book in six different countries. We had the US, UK, Italy, France, Germany, and Spain. And so I did all those ads yesterday. Also, every day I'll be messing with ads a little bit, trying to really fine tune it. And that's something talking with Armand helped me out with. And then today I will be doing Google ads and BookBub ads. And then it's just going to be a matter of just keeping them up, fine tuning everything and doing that. But I already see a big difference. I see my books rising in the charts, and that is awesome. So it's just going to be a little change in focus, but it is all good. Next week we have, so Try Not to Die on Brightside comes out on Tuesday. If you guys are able to pick that up or share the news of it, or if you read it, if you enjoy it, if you've been doing the contest and you think it's a pretty awesome book, please tell your friends. Word of mouth is huge. Any kind of book recommendation, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, on BookBub or Goodreads, all that is awesome. So I really appreciate that. And then on Monday, Messiah will be on sale for 99 cents. So the Kindle edition will be on sale for, I think, Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday. So be sure to pick that up if you haven't done so yet. It is dark. It is maybe a little depressing, but it's also a lot of fun. There's some sex. There's some violence. There's some more violence. There's a little bit more sex. You get the idea. And some religious stuff, too. All right, guys. I am going to cut this short so I can get on my advertising. I'm going to knock that out right now after I edit this podcast and put it out. And, my son was sick all week, so all week long I've been dealing with him, which is awesome. I appreciate the opportunity. It's incredible that I've been able to spend so much time with my kids. It's just that between Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I thought I would be getting some work done during the day while he was at school, but he was homesick, cuddled up next to me, so not a whole lot was done. So that's why today I am extra motivated to move it and get some stuff complete. All right, guys, I am going to leave you now with Woodshop Aftermath. I hope you enjoy this short story, and I will see you guys next week.
Woodshop Aftermath. It was Friday, Sam's birthday, and he had to see her before school let out. Then he had to get to his appointment with Dr. Heckam. Sam's present in one hand, his math book in the other, Tyler moved through the stream of students pouring out of their classrooms. He snaked past two football players punching each other in the arm, then a group of goth kids passing a vape pen. Tyler focused straight ahead. He wasn't in the mood to see their stares, to hear their mumbles, and call him freak. He'd only started school 1 month before, but that's not why they talked about him. The hallway branched, right to the administration building and his appointment, left to Sam's locker. Dr. Heckam's warning not to be late echoed in Tyler's head. He turned left, hoped Sam would be there so he'd make it to his appointment on time. Sam, of course, wasn't there. She was never on time. Tyler set her present on a small desk in the hallway and wiped his sweaty hand on his shirt. What could he say that wasn't lame? Happy birthday. How's your birthday going? Did you get any cool presents? Here you go. Here's a present I made for you in Woodshop. I spent the last 2 weeks making it. Look what a dork I am. Do you know how pretty you are? Do you still like me? A few kids ran down the hall and a crowd formed outside the bathrooms. Someone shouted. Tyler picked up Sam's present and found himself at the back of a crowd when he heard a girl plead, "Stop it!" It was Sam. Tyler pushed his way into the middle of the throng. Bradley, a pompous prick, who would have been in 10th grade if he wasn't so stupid, stood over Sam, who was on her knees trying to retrieve a pink bakery box from the ground. Every time she went to grab the box, Bradley nudged it out of her reach with his boot. Her fair skin flushed red, and Tyler felt the hair on his arms rising when she told Bradley to leave her alone. Bradley kicked the pink box against the wall. Tyler surprised himself when he said, "Back off, Bradley!" Sam and Bradley both looked toward Tyler. Then Bradley grabbed her hair, turned her head, and pumped his groin at her face. Sam swatted at his arm and flailed to get away, but Bradley wouldn't let her go. "Bradley, I'm not kidding," Tyler said, trying to keep his voice from cracking. Bradley talked so loudly everyone in the hall could hear. "What are you going to do about it, psycho?" "Yeah," Hector chimed in from behind Bradley, his raised middle fingers a clear indication of what he thought about Tyler. "What are you going to do about it? Pull a Newtown?" Kent, their little dork follower, stood next to Hector, grinning his idiot grin, then twisting his face into his rendition of a psychopath. "No, man. This guy's all Virginia Tech. He's like the Energizer Bunny. He'll just keep going and going and going." 3-on-1, with a whole bunch of kids to watch him get his ass kicked. But Tyler wasn't walking away from the only girl who'd ever stood up for him. A locker slammed shut at the far end of the hall, and Hector jumped. Tyler dropped Sam's present and his book. It didn't matter if he was smaller than them. It didn't matter that he was all by himself. Bradley chuckled, kept Sam down with his hand on her shoulder.
Are you serious? Check this loser out," Tyler said.
"Let her be."
Bradley stared down at Sam's chest.
She's a big girl. She can take care of herself.
I'm not telling you again.
Bradley let go of Sam and took a step toward Tyler.
Or what? Or what? What are you going to do, you little psycho?
Bradley stuck out his chest, what they called puffing in juvie. Kids did that when they were scared deep down, and they were usually the ones who got their butts kicked. That's what Tyler tried to tell himself as he looked up at Bradley. Pretending he was someone else, someone stronger and more confident, Tyler said,
"I'm not scared of you or your little buddies."
Oohs and ahs came from the crowd. Before Bradley could respond, Tyler took a step toward him.
"Donnie was a lot bigger than you are,"
Tyler said, his voice flat and dead. No one said a word. Bradley looked like he wanted to say something but kept his mouth shut. A teacher that Tyler hadn't seen before came out of a classroom and yelled for them to break it up before she called the principal. Tyler couldn't help but notice she focused on him the whole time. Even teachers he didn't know had heard of him. They were convinced he was the monster the papers made him out to be. Tyler turned back to Bradley, but the punk and his friends were walking away, heads held high as if they hadn't just chickened out. If Bradley really wanted to fight, he would have done it in front of the teacher. In juvie, Tyler had witnessed one kid jump another one right in front of an officer, stabbing that kid's neck with the sharpened end of his plastic fork 1, 2, 3, 4 times before the officer pulled him off. The rest of the crowd dispersed while Tyler helped Sam off the ground. She thanked him, but didn't need to. The way she looked at him was enough to make him take on a dozen guys. She was the one person who didn't believe he was a monster, who knew he was innocent.
who believed he wouldn't want to hurt anyone for any reason. She knew that Tyler, prior to his juvenile hall stint, wouldn't ever do something so vicious. But that kid had been forgotten by everyone else. They only saw the Tyler who had spent the last 3 years locked up. He looked different. Maybe he was different. He learned that sometimes people needed to be hurt. Sam picked up the mangled pink box. It was filled with brightly decorated cupcakes, most of which were squished, their frosting splattered on the dirty tile.
"You shouldn't have done that," she said.
Tyler tried not to stare at her low-rise jeans as she stood.
"I'm glad to see you, too."
She swiped her hair from her eyes and said,
"Sorry. I'm just surprised to see you."
She kicked her locker closed.
"Don't you have your appointment today?"
Tyler wasn't listening. He scoured the floor for his present, spotted it by a row of lockers. Luckily, it hadn't met the fate of the cupcake box. He picked it up, gripped the wooden cylinder, not sure if he should give it to her. Sam repeated,
"Don't you have your appointment?"
"Well, yeah, but I was passing by and thought I'd see you." Sam motioned toward his math book.
"You passed admin on the way from pre-algebra."
"What can I say? I'm still new here." Tyler forced an awkward laugh. "Haven't got the place figured out yet."
"You should get going. The bell's going to ring any minute and you can't be late."
"Then we better hurry." Tyler grabbed her hand.
"I'm walking you to class."
Sam hesitated before following.
"You can't walk me down the hall. I don't want you to ever get in trouble because of me again."
Tyler almost said that he would do anything for her, that she was worth it.
"What's that?"
she asked, indicating her present. He almost offered it to her and wished her a happy birthday, but he saw the clock. Less than 2 minutes. Sam told him to just go. Tyler began to pull her in the opposite direction.
"Woodshop's over here. I said I'd walk you to class."
Sam complained, but not too much, and hurried with Tyler to the lone building outside the double doors, where the loud noises wouldn't disrupt the other classes. At the door, Sam looked down at her mangled box of cupcakes.
"These are ruined. I worked so hard on them," she said.
"You made your own cupcakes for your birthday?" Her look said she was surprised he remembered. Tyler said,
"I thought you hated Jenkins. Why take the cupcakes to Woodshop? I need all the brownie points I can get. Jenkins hates me, especially when I don't wear a skirt he can look up."
Tyler changed the subject, worried he wouldn't be able to talk if he thought about her smooth thighs peeking out from under a skirt.
"You do just as well as any of the boys in there. You'll find out that doesn't always matter."
Unable to think of anything clever to say, Tyler simply said,
"Well, that sucks."
The bell was going to ring any second, but Tyler didn't care. He tried to remember if Sam had always been so beautiful, if she'd always been so quiet. He wondered if her dad still drank too much, if things had gotten any better at home. 15 feet from the door, the bell sounded, signaling the start of 7th period. Tyler opened the door and held it for her.
"Will you just go?" Sam begged. "I really don't want to see you get in any trouble."
Tyler nodded, started jogging backwards.
"I have a present for you. I'll give it to you after school."
She smiled before she turned to head inside. Mr. Jenkins, with his creepy mustache and safety goggles, ushered her in. Someone inside the class whistled. It was Bradley, who was sitting at the table closest to the door. The prick patted the empty chair next to him, telling Sam he had another place for her to sit if she didn't want to sit there. Tyler headed back, didn't care that Mr. Jenkins was in the middle of roll call. He pushed open the door all the way.
"Excuse me?"
Mr. Jenkins said, clearly pissed.
"Go take your Ritalin or whatever it is they give nutjobs like you," Bradley said.
Hector and Kent laughed. Mr. Jenkins snorted. Tyler didn't waste any words, just headed straight for Bradley. The look of surprise on Bradley's face was priceless as he pushed back the chair, struggling to get to his feet. If Tyler had been any quicker, and if Sam hadn't yelled at Tyler not to do anything stupid, Tyler would have embarrassed Bradley in front of the entire class. But Mr. Jenkins was quick. He blocked Tyler's path, a 2x4 in his right hand, his left hand extended like a crossing guard.
"Don't you have somewhere to go?"
"Yeah, go to see your shrink," Bradley pointed at Tyler. "You and I will talk after school."
Tyler imagined how good it would feel to rip the wood out of Mr. Jenkins' hand and bash Bradley's face.
"Ignore him," Sam said. "I can take care of myself."
Without looking at her, Bradley, Hector, Kent, or any of the other assholes laughing at him, Tyler spun around and headed for the administration building. He was late. His heart was pounding. He took deep breaths and practiced Heckam's positive thinking drills, told himself that Bradley wouldn't really try to fight him after school, that the punk would end up chickening out. He tried to forget about Mr. Jenkins threatening him with the lumber, and he concentrated on the smile Sam gave him when he told her about the present. Tyler pulled out the wooden cylinder he'd only finished the night before. He hoped Sam would notice the effort he put into the picture-perfect alignment of the bracelet she'd given him back when he was in the detention facility. "Sam and Tyler, best friends forever," the bracelet said. He wondered if she knew how happy he had been to get it from his mom when she visited him. He wondered if she knew that bracelet was what got him through so many lonely, scary, miserable nights. Maybe someday she could be more than just a friend. Tyler entered the office, nodded at the secretary, and headed to the last door on the left. He stopped in his tracks when he saw that his mom sat across from the stuffy old Heckam.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked. This couldn't be good.
"Your mother is here because I asked her to come in."
Heckam folded his wrinkled hands. "The real question is, why are you late?"
"I forgot I had to come today. I got all the way to Woodshop before Mr. Jenkins reminded me."
Heckam glanced in the folder.
"You have Woodshop first period."
I'll have to put this into my report to Officer Wright. I warned you that I would."
Tyler shrugged his shoulders, trying to seem like he didn't care, but he did.
"Should I also add insolence?"
"It doesn't matter what I think, so do whatever the fuck you want."
"Tyler," his mom said, "watch your language."
"And have a seat," Heckam said. Tyler did as he was told, well aware that Heckam would love to bury him in the progress report to Tyler's probation officer. Tyler took a deep breath and said,
"I'm sorry I'm late, but I did forget that I had this appointment."
"That's a convenient excuse."
Not about to take the doctor's bait, Tyler said quietly,
"We've talked about this, Tyler. Making excuses is one of the roadblocks to your recovery."
"I thought I was recovered. Why else would they let me out?"
"Your rehabilitation is ongoing. We're to ensure you never do to anyone else what you did to that boy."
Tyler wondered if a high school junior Donnie's size should be considered a boy, but he kept the question to himself.
"Not taking responsibility for your actions. That's been an issue for you, hasn't it?"
Tyler felt his mother stare and nodded.
"Only by taking responsibility for the wrongs you have committed can you begin to respect yourself. And only then will others be able to respect you."
"I'm trying. If I screw up, I try to admit it."
He turned to his mom. "Right?"
"Well, for the stuff around the house you do, like when you forget to take out the trash or don't clean up after Lucas."
She turned to Heckam.
"That's our blind Labrador. Tyler's very good with him."
"But that's not what we're talking about, Tyler, and you know it," Heckam said.
"I'm not admitting to something I didn't do. I just forgot."
"Tyler," Heckam began.
"Okay, I was talking to a girl. I'm sorry. Happy?"
"A girl?"
his mother asked.
"Not that Samantha."
"No,"
Tyler said way too quickly. His mom was silent for a moment. She looked at him and said,
"What did we do wrong, Tyler? Your dad and I did our best to raise you right. How did you get like this?"
Before she became hysterical and started to cry, Tyler said,
"Nothing. You guys did nothing wrong."
Then he looked at Heckam and added,
"Neither did I."
Heckam cleared his throat.
"Then why were you arrested? Why did the judge sentence you to 3 years in juvenile detention?"
Because no one believed me. Is it so hard to believe that I'm telling the truth? That I didn't do anything?
Heckam shook his head. The facts are the reason why no one believes you. You were found covered in his blood.
I was trying to help him.
After the damage you'd done. Tyler tried to remain calm, trying not to think about every humiliating experience in juvie.
You can't even consider that maybe Donnie fell down?
He looked at Heckam and then his mom.
He did have epilepsy.
The doctor pointed out that the tests proved Donnie didn't suffer a seizure that day. Then why did he have a history of beating you up and teasing you?
Well, maybe the test was wrong. You ever think of that?
What he did have was a history of beating you up and teasing you. Tyler shook his head. He wasn't going to convince Heckam or anyone else, even his mom. Only Tyler and Sam knew that he hadn't hurt Donnie. Only Sam knew what had happened before Tyler arrived. Tyler had been on his way home from elementary school when he heard the scream coming from the alley. The second scream he'd recognized as Sam's. He'd run full speed toward the sound of her cry. He'd never told anyone that part of the story, and he wasn't about to now. Heckam wouldn't have believed him anyway, and he couldn't bring up Sam in front of his mom, who always said there was something wicked about that little girl. His mom was right, but she didn't know the whole story. The doctor asked Tyler's mom some questions, leaving Tyler to his memories. He remembered racing into the alley, his heart thudding against his chest, seeing Donnie on his back flopping around like a fish. In Donnie's clenched fist was the cherry donut Tyler had given Sam earlier in the day. It was smashed just like the cupcakes in her pink box. Hearing his name, Tyler snapped back to the present, realized Heckam was asking him something. His mother started speaking when he interrupted her. Tyler told the doctor he didn't feel well.
I need to go to the bathroom.
Heckam excused him with a wave of his wrinkled hand. Make it quick. The memory replayed as Tyler left the building and jogged past the bathrooms. Sam had been standing over Donnie, her shirt ripped, her cheek an angry red, a palm print still visible. Donnie's face was red, too. His blonde hair was red. The concrete was red. Donnie's eyes were wide, staring at Tyler. Donnie was scared, his expression begging for help as he raised his own head off the ground and smashed it into the concrete with a sickening thud, blood spraying everywhere. Without a word, he brought up his head again and smashed it back down, over and over, again and again. Sam just sat off to the side with her eyes closed. Tyler's jog turned into a sprint, the woodshop building still 50 yards away. He hoped he was overreacting, that Sam wasn't doing it again. He was probably just imagining things. But if he wasn't, this time he would do the smart thing and take Sam away. He wouldn't listen to her cry while he tried to make Donnie stop bashing his brain into the ground. Running faster, the distance closing, Tyler's heartbeat sounded like the thud, thud, thud of Donnie's skull. He remembered how Sam stood and watched Tyler try to restrain Donnie from hurting himself even more.
He tried to kiss me, Sam had cried. He tried to kiss me and touch me. Don't tell my dad, Tyler, please. He'll say it was my fault.
Now only 10 feet from the woodshop, Tyler heard the scream of machinery. That was not unusual, but Tyler still hesitated to open the door. He gathered his courage and entered the building. Most of the students were bunched together in the far corner, staring at their feet or the back of the person in front of them, their hands clasped over their ears. Hector was the closest of the three boys who were not lucky enough to be part of the herd. He stood in front of the planer, both of his pinky fingers on the floor, looking like bloody sausages covered in sawdust. His face twisted in a horrified grimace, but he just stood there letting the whirling blade tear through his fingers a millimeter at a time. Kent was on the machine to Hector's left. He kept feeding his fist into the grinder, a slow, soggy push. Tyler spotted Bradley over the ripsaw. He was on his knees in front of the massive blade that was spinning, whirring, inching closer. Bradley looked at Tyler with his wild eyes as he pumped his groin into the spinning saw, chunks of meat and cloth and blood spraying everywhere. Jenkins was overseeing it all, shaking in the corner while his favorite pupils mutilated themselves. Sam was sitting behind Jenkins' desk. Tyler ran over to her, pleaded for her to stop. She told him to leave, her voice cold and calm. Nothing like it had been with Donnie.
"Why, Sam?" Tyler asked. "Why?"
"They were going to hurt you."
It took Tyler a moment to find his voice.
"You have to stop. I can't let you take the blame again. Plus,"
she motioned toward the other students, all the eyewitnesses she let live,
"it's too late for that. Now go."
Tyler knew she was right, that there'd be no way out of this incident. But he wasn't ready to leave her. While Hector took off his remaining fingers, the grinder polished Kent's forearm, and Bradley completed his evisceration, Tyler took the wooden cylinder from his pocket and placed it on the desk.
"Happy birthday, Sam."
Sam smiled, stood up from her desk, and kissed Tyler on his cheek. A few of the other students ran from the building. Sam told Tyler,
"Go."
Tyler could only think of the kiss, the kind words, not caring of the carnage surrounding them.
"I'll stay."
"No, you won't. I need you to leave. The cops are going to show, and I don't know if I'm ready to let them take me. You can't be here for that."
Tyler tried to stay, but Sam forced his feet towards the door. Her control over his body weakened when Tyler stepped outside. He jammed his foot in the doorway and tried to call Sam's name, but nothing came out. All he could do was watch as Sam focused her attention on Mr. Jenkins, who'd just started the jigsaw.